From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, Lebanon on the Brink. Our guest, Ambassador Ed Gabriel, former U.S. Ambassador to Morocco from 1997 to 2001, currently President of the American Task Force for Lebanon. The last time we discussed Lebanon at these VOA microphones was soon after the widespread protests in October 2019, which forced the resignation of former Prime Minister Saad Hariri. A broad cross-section of Lebanese took to the streets to protest endemic corruption, the lack of basic services, as well as the current sectarian political system built on patronage networks and clientelism. While the coronavirus pandemic has kept people indoors, the underlying grievances remain, according to the reputable New York-based Soufan Center's Intel brief published Wednesday, July 29. Lebanon's political and economic crisis is worsening as the country's economic emergency collides with the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the Intel brief, in this fractious, strategically located nation of 6.8 million, 20% of whom are refugees, unemployment has increased to 30% due to coronavirus-induced lockdowns. In addition, the Lebanese currency has plunged, dropping in value by 80% since the demonstrations began. Bread prices have climbed, and the UN World Food Program, which feeds 750,000 Syrian refugees in Lebanon, is now planning to distribute food to Lebanese citizens for the first time since 2006. The Soufan Center reports that much of the country now receives only a couple of hours of electricity a day. Some have likened the situation in Lebanon to a, quote, Venezuela on the Mediterranean, at least if downward trends continue unabated for the foreseeable future. The American Task Force for Lebanon has just published a comprehensive policy paper on Lebanon entitled Recommendations for a Sustainable Bilateral Relationship, drawn up by a Lebanon expert group, which includes Ambassador Gabriel, our special guest on Press Conference USA. We'll talk with the ambassador, an American diplomat of Lebanese descent, who has extensive background in international affairs and policy matters related to the Greater Middle East, about the current Lebanese situation and why the stability of that country, sandwiched between Syria, Israel, and Jordan, and in which Iran exerts considerable influence via Hezbollah, is critical not only for the region, but for the United States and the world. Ambassador Gabriel joins us via Skype as we continue to practice social distancing here in Washington. Ambassador, welcome to the program.
It's good to talk to you, Carol.
Full disclosure, I've known Ambassador Gabriel for many years, so I may slip into referring to him by his first name. Ed.
Please start there. No problem.
Very good. Nonetheless, Ambassador Gabriel, before we get into Lebanon per se, tell us about ATFL, the American Task Force for Lebanon, when it was created, and what is its primary purpose?
Great. Thank you. And thanks for the invitation to be with you today. The American Task Force for Lebanon, ATFL, has been around for more than 30 years. It's made up of Americans of Lebanese ancestry, prominent Americans in various fields of the arts, entertainment, business, government, military, all walks of life, and all various confessional religions that are very similar to the religions in Lebanon, Christian, Muslim, and other kinds of religions. ATFL has tried in recent years to really become a conduit to create a better understanding between Lebanon and the United States. In a way, we're like a track 1.5 organization. Now, what does that mean? It means that we talk to both governments, although we're not a government in which they hold bilateral relationships between two countries, which would be official in a track 1 relationship. We as an NGO, nonprofit organization, talk to each government as a non-governmental agency, but we carry messages, we back-channel ideas, and we give our best advice to both governments on how they can improve the relationship between them. I should say that ATFL, because it's really formed by Americans of first, second, and third generation, a few immigrants, is such that we really think like Americans first, but we have in our hearts the ancestry and heritage that our forefathers brought with us. So when we talk, we usually talk from an American point of view, trying to understand the Lebanese point of view as well.
Well, thank you for that. And we'll get into some of the members of the expert group in a moment. But I provided some information about the dire situation in Lebanon in my introduction, Ed. What else would you like to add about the urgency and significance of the situation, the deteriorating political and economic situation, not just for Lebanon, but also for the region? And why does it matter globally and for U.S.-Lebanese relations?
It's urgent. There's an urgent need now to save Lebanon. Think about Lebanon falling into the wrong hands today and what that would mean for our interest in Israel, Jordan, and the Middle East. Right now, we're working with a country that we can actually depend upon in certain ways, and we have to really maintain that relationship and prevent it from falling in the wrong direction. So we can talk about U.S. interest in that regard, but I think really what you'll see as you examine the Lebanese situation is a country that is faced with economic collapse today. It's faced with economic collapse mainly because it's a country that has lived on borrowed money. It has basically brought in a lot of foreign investment from the Lebanese diaspora, which is huge around the world. There are more Lebanese outside of Lebanon than inside Lebanon. They brought huge amounts of dollars into Lebanon, and they have been incentivized to bring those dollars by high interest rates for bonds. And then out the back door, the money went to government to create better government. Unfortunately, better government wasn't waiting for them. There were no reforms. There were no changes. So that money got eaten up by a corrupt elite class that has been ruling through several generations in Lebanon. So it came home to roost. The debts kept climbing. It got worse and worse. And finally, they ran out of money because the international community started to question whether or not they could, in fact, get their money back at some point. And when that collapsed, so came the Lebanese economy. So that's one whole part of the equation. On the other side is the effects of that, with the pound, the Lebanese pound, the lira, falling, as you said, to unbelievable levels. Today, a family that was making maybe $2,000 a month is making maybe $300 a month, because if they're paid in Lebanese pounds, that's what you're going to see. So you're seeing now a tremendous social upheaval. Combine that with political upheaval, which started last October when people went to the streets and they said, enough is enough. We want a government that we can trust that is not corrupt. So you've got a political upheaval, economic upheaval, and socioeconomic upheaval as well.
And of course, all of that exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, then take the pandemic and add to it not only the pandemic, which is striking Lebanon as much as every other place in the world, but you also have the highest number of refugees per capita from Syria and the Palestinian territories residing in Lebanon today. About one quarter of the people of Lebanon are refugees. Can you imagine the impact with that as well?
Absolutely. And if anybody needs any more reasons to understand the critical importance of Lebanon, they need only to look at its geographic location on the border with Israel. You have the conflict. We just recently witnessed an alleged incursion by Hezbollah, which presumably the Israelis thwarted. This was in retaliation for an alleged Israeli attack on a Hezbollah agent in Syria. Not to mention, as you said earlier, Ed, you have so many influences. Iran, Russians now are in nearby Syria controlling the situation. China would like to get a piece. There's a lot at stake in the country. Let's go to your report. And I'm actually delighted to say that every member of the Lebanon expert group, except for one person, has been either on this program or my other program, Encounter. So Les Campbell joined us for our program about the Lebanese protests. Paul Salem has been on the show. Mona Yacoubian, Ambassador Firestein, Hisham Melham, a good friend, and Rhonda Sleem. They've all been on my programs. We're delighted to have you as well. They're all outstanding practitioners and scholars of the region. Ed, what was the purpose and impetus of the report, which is very much focused on U.S.-Lebanese relations? And what would you say are some of the primary findings?
So the major purpose of the report was to take many different moving parts going on in Lebanon. About a year and a half ago, we started and said, where is the country headed and how can the United States long-term be helpful? But about 9 months ago, with the demonstrations that started in the street, it became even more apparent and more urgent. And so what we realized was we needed these groups of experts to come together and make sure that we were speaking with a common message, a common purpose, and a common understanding of the way we see the problem, where we go from here. So the major purpose was to bring the best thinking to bear and see if we could find consensus together, which, as you saw in this report, we did. What we found were two things, if I could just summarize the report. On the one hand, I would put in a basket of U.S. interests and also recommendations that we feel the U.S. should do in what I'd call the conditional basket, things that should be conditioned. In another basket, we would say things that have to be unconditional in helping Lebanon. In the conditional basket, these experts who have come together have concluded that the international community is not going to throw good money after bad unless the Lebanese can come up with a common vision for their future. They need to first and foremost bring all the stakeholders in that country together and say, where do we want our country to go and what will it take to get there so that we can speak with one voice? So that was our principal finding. And what we said there is, until that happens, we do not see the international community giving billions and billions of dollars in bailout money to the same old group of people who have hijacked the country for a couple of decades or more. So it has to be conditioned on reform. If there's reform, electricity, customs reform, more transparency, more regulatory control, more judicious oversight. If there are those few things that can come together, we think the United States, the Arab Gulf countries, the so-called Seder countries, those are countries that have come together to help rebuild Lebanon, and they've offered $11 billion in aid, plus the ISG countries, that's the support group for Lebanon countries, which also has another $5 or more billion, plus the International Monetary Fund, which is $4 or more billion. When you add all that up, they're ready to help this small country, but all they've got to do is those few reforms. Without it, unfortunately, the international community cannot stomach any longer throwing good money after bad. On the other side is unconditional aid. In that unconditional basket, we have humanitarian relief, anti-poverty relief, help for the refugees in the country, making sure that the Lebanese Armed Forces, which, by the way, is another interest of ours, which is so pro-American and so trained by American forces, it's been called the best trained Arab force in the Arab world. But their families are suffering the way others are. Can we bring relief to the Lebanese Armed Forces, the LAF, the LAF force families, so that you got that unconditional need to help Lebanon immediately for their humanitarian and social needs as well?
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Ambassador Ed Gabriel, former U.S. Ambassador to Morocco, currently President of the American Task Force for Lebanon. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Well, here's a shout out to all our listeners in the greater Middle East, from Beirut to Jerusalem, from Aden to Tehran, and all parts in between. And for our Muslim listeners, we're wishing you Eid Mubarak. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please follow us on Twitter or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. at Carol Castiel, VOA. And now back to our special guest, Ambassador Ed Gabriel, president of the American Task Force for Lebanon. And we're going to be talking now, Ed, about some of those recommendations and how viable it will be to implement any of them. First, to the economic situation, any country that's compared to Venezuela, you know, is in deep trouble, obviously. And this was such a rich country. The people are vibrant. As you said, we have the diaspora here in the United States, all over West Africa, and in so many other countries contributing to all of these cultures and countries. And as you said earlier, it survived mainly on remittances. And since those have dried up, and the fact that there's no real productive base, evidently, or source of hard currency, what are the options for the economy?
Well, that's a great question. By the way, this study is based upon, on the unconditional side that I described earlier, Lebanon coming together and making a couple of reforms to open the door for stabilization funds. If they don't do this, they're going to basically stumble. And then the question will be asked, what is the U.S. policy then moving forward? So that's a big question that's in front of us. If they don't take the step to have a universal vision together on what to do. So with that in mind, Carol, as we talk through this, let's think about what the options are. What it seems like today, in order to stabilize the monetary policy, the banking policy, and really bring money to bear from the International Monetary Fund, is going to be a question of how do we recapitalize the banks? The IMF and the current government seem to feel as though that the depositors, particularly the very large depositors at the bank, have to take a haircut. In other words, not get back all of the money that they've earned through their interest, et cetera. They may get their principal, they may not get their interest. That would be a way to help recapitalize the banking industry. It seems to be that the banks are saying, no, we don't see it that way. And the central bank seems to agree. We've met with the central bank recently. We've met with the Association of Banks of Lebanon, and we've met with the government and various ministers. So what they're saying is, you know, there's a lot of government assets, the crown jewels of Lebanon. It's land, it's telecommunications, it's ports, it's electricity company. All of these things owned by the country are billions of dollars in assets. And somehow they should put in some kind of a hold for them to be collateralized so the banks could recapitalize themselves. Well, that's taking the government jewels and giving it to the banks so they can recapitalize themselves. That doesn't fly either with a lot of people. So what they seem to be talking about today is a PAMCO. I forget exactly what that stands for, but essentially it's a sovereign fund where these assets would be put into hold, owned by the government, and can be used to guarantee capitalization with certain banks. We're told now on the monetary side, that's where the discussion is with this sovereign fund kind of idea, with these assets going there to help recapitalize the country. So that's the monetary. On the fiscal side, you basically need these reforms that we're talking about, but there's some immediate needs as well on the humanitarian side. And we can get into both of those depending on which way you'd like to go in terms of that discussion.
Well, Ed, we don't have a lot more time, so we're going to rush through very important topics. It sounds to me like some of the economic reforms may even depend on political reforms, because that was one of your recommendations, as well as the protesters who took to the streets last October. Talk about Lebanon's unique political system, and particularly the fact that Hezbollah, which is a political party, but it's also an armed group heavily backed by Iran. Talk about the fact that it is a major power broker in the government, and to what extent that's maybe an impediment to reform. But there are probably other impediments. Talk about the sectarian system and to what extent you think it can be reformed, and how important would that be for these other reforms to take hold?
So the Lebanese government has had a tradition of the president being a Maronite Catholic, the prime minister being a Sunni Muslim, the president of the parliament being a Shia Muslim, and then other posts for Druze, Greek Orthodox, and others. And they've generally held those posts. And among themselves, over the years, they've maintained peace, if you will, since the end of the war, by divvying up the country. Some of the sectarian leaders control telecommunications. Others control the ports. And still others control other assets, the airport or whatever. Over time, Hezbollah has grown in influence. They're considered a terrorist organization by the United States, at least on the military side of their equation. But they do have members in the parliament on the political side. And so for America, we have a problem working with a Lebanese government that may be controlled by Hezbollah, a terrorist organization, which is funded by Iran, a country we have significant issues with. And their power is growing because they found a coalition partner in the Christians. So think of it as, a, generally speaking, a Christian-Muslim breakdown. And the Muslims are broken down with Shia and Sunni. You could almost look at it as a third, third, third. The Hezbollah, which is part of Shia, is teamed up with part of the Christians, and they are a formidable force in the parliament and government and are edging their way more and more into more power. This creates problems, and it creates problems because America's interests are such that it could affect our relationship with the Lebanese armed forces over time and in terms of the way in which they conduct themselves with their neighbors, one by helping the Assad regime, which the United States does not support, and two, by causing problems with Israel, which is an ally of the United States. So this is a conundrum for us, and it's a problem that we would like to see change. The people in the streets said, we've had it. We're sick of it. We want an honest, elected, democratic government. We don't want Hezbollah to control this, and we don't want sectarian leaders and their cohorts to support this. So now we're faced with whether or not they go through, you call it political reforms, we could call it that. I look at fiscal policy now. We talked about monetary before. Through these fiscal reforms, more accountability, a better judicial system, and making sure that the government acts in response to the people. Can you imagine electricity? They only have electricity for 2 hours a day. They could privatize electricity and bring the rates down. And by the way, they subsidize electricity to $2 billion a year. That's one quarter of the deficit of the Lebanese government. So rather than losing $2 billion a year, the government could be making money if they would privatize electricity. But they haven't done it. Why? Because of the corrupt nature of the problem.
So, Ed, with respect to politics, would it take constitutional reforms? And to what extent is there an appetite to shift from this sectarian system to a more democratic system that would not necessarily assign positions according to one's confession?
Well, we don't know what the people in the street are going to demand and how powerful they will remain. But the question about whether or not this sectarian change occurs is a longer term question.
Sure.
And it comes through electoral reform. However, immediately, the people have to come together on a common vision. We talk to one minister who has a different opinion from the prime minister, who has a different opinion from the private sector, who has a different opinion from the central bank. And the IMF says, you know what? Call me when you're together. So when you say what can be done, the people have to come together and realize that they need a common, democratic, clean, transparent way of moving forward to entice the International Monetary Fund. It's all about that. Once the IMF comes in, America will come in, the Europeans will come in, and the Arabs will come in. But until there's a common vision that commits to reforms that are transparent and clean, then we're headed in a different direction.
Well, that was very well said. And in the few minutes we have left, let's look at the international dimension. I wanted to ask you, particularly since your report talks about the bilateral relationship and we're in the midst of an election campaign. Mr. Trump is unlikely to do anything right now other than withdraw. I think that's been his policy or his inclination not to get involved. But do you think that the U.S. withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal and then the subsequent maximum pressure campaign by the United States against Iran, did that help bolster Hezbollah or did it hurt Hezbollah?
I think it was a bad move for the United States. Let me put it that way. I don't think it helped the United States to walk away from the JCPOA. However, you got to realize that we could have had the JCPOA and continued a maximum pressure campaign. One didn't fix the other. One is about using nuclear power for a peaceful purpose, not for making bombs. That's what this was about. And we continued the sanctions on Iran and we continued the pressure on them in other ways. So I think it was a grave mistake to do away with that deal and somehow think that you're going to then add pressure on Iran to do other things. Having said that, sanctions are working, but they can't be the only arrow in your quiver. And they're being overused right now. And they're going to put pressure on the United States to the point where the Diab government's going to talk to China and Russia's going to talk to the Lebanese armed forces. And then you have the problems in Syria where we're losing our influence as a result as well. So no, I think we should not have walked away from the Iranian deal. However, I think we could have taken the next step and continued to ratchet up the pressure with Iran. A big question though in the future, and that is, how do we rebalance America's interests? America is best when it's balancing its interests. And we've really shown a lot of support for Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries and their fight with Iran. I think we've got to take a step back and not only look at how we re-engage Iran in a productive way, but also make sure that we're balancing our interests, not their interests, from a U.S. point of view, which would mean a change of policy in Syria, which would put us back in the game in Syria, and make sure we're protecting the Lebanon function, which is so important to the United States' interests.
To close, Ed Gabriel, what could change if Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee for president, wins in the November election? How could perhaps that change Lebanon's fortunes and those of the region? Do you have a sense of how he views Lebanon and U.S. interests and this idea of rebalancing U.S. interests in the region?
Well, believe it or not, other than what we've just talked about on Iran, I think a Biden policy would be very similar to a State Department policy. You notice I didn't say a Trump policy, but the realists at the State Department, which are filled with experts on Lebanon, from the undersecretary to the assistant secretary to some great ambassadors, would be very realistic in their approach to Lebanon and would follow the recommendations and do follow the recommendations you've seen in our study that we've talked about, the conditional pressure on the one hand, but the unconditional support. I think that a Biden administration would reexamine a number of the sanctions that are going on now and make sure that they're targeting the right individuals and not hurting Lebanon. So I think there would be a slight shift on sanctions to make them more targeted and specific on individuals relating to terrorism and against U.S. interests and not hurting Lebanon. I think also the compassion that Joe Biden actually shows is going to show in his foreign policy. And I think you're going to see on the refugee and humanitarian issues, that things like PL 480 funds, which allows to basically monetize subsidized wheat in America and turn it into food programs around the world, will increase, things like that. But otherwise, you'll see a State Department and Biden policy very similar.
Ambassador Ed Gabriel is president of the American Task Force for Lebanon. Ed, thank you so much for your time and terrific insights about what's at stake for Lebanon and the region. We truly appreciate your time.
Thank you, Carol. Good to be with you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.